Nice. I'm thinking that's what I'm doing now. And remember, I need a ride to my car. It's at the office. Okie dokie then. I'll see you in a little bit. I disconnected, gave up a sigh, and stood. It looks like Kulicki lost a shoe.
Who's Kulicki?
He was the new deli manager. We sort of hired him.
And he lasted how long?
I checked my watch. Approximately 4 hours.
Damn,
Morelli said.
Those aliens are good. They spotted a new manager after only 4 hours.
You're thinking someone on the inside is involved.
It's possible.
There were only 3 people who knew Kulicki was the manager.
Crude probably wants to talk to them. Again.
I grabbed my messenger bag off the coffee table and hiked it onto my shoulder. I have to roll.
I'll roll with you. I want to make sure you don't get beamed up by mistake.
Morelli called Jimmy Crute from the car, and by the time we got to the deli, there were already 2 uniforms on the scene. Crute arrived a couple minutes after us. Lula, Stretch, Raymond, and Dahlia were hunkered down inside.
This is getting very old, Raymond said to me. I am thinking this is not such a good place to work.
He looked over at Morelli. I have a green card.
Good for you,
Morelli said.
Can I see it?
No, Raymond said. It would not be possible to show it to you at this time. I fear I have misplaced it.
You should try to find it, Lula said. You could lose your job here without that green card.
Fortunately, this is a sanctuary deli, Raymond said. It is a prime consideration for maintaining employment at this establishment.
One of the uniforms ran a strip of crime scene tape across the back of the deli parking lot, and a photographer showed up to take pictures of the shoe before Crute bagged and labeled it. Morelli walked the alley with a flashlight, and I stayed inside and helped myself to a piece of coconut cream pie.
We should get Vinny to put up a security camera over the back door, Lula said. Then we'd see next time someone got snatched.
Vinny is MIA, I said. He's not going to be a lot of help here.
I forgot, Lula said. There's so many people missing, I could hardly keep track of them.
I ate my pie and considered Raymond, Stretch, and Dahlia. Morelli brought up a good point. Kulicki disappeared in record time. Not many people knew he was the manager. That information had to have been passed on from Raymond, Stretch, or Dahlia. We were all sitting in the dining area. Lula was checking out Facebook. Dahlia was filing her nails. Raymond and Stretch were texting on their smartphones. Did any of you tell anyone we had a new manager? I asked. Everyone shook their head no. Someone knew, I said.
Those space aliens got ways, Lula said. They can probably read minds.
How long must we sit here? Raymond asked. I have many things to do.
I went outside and found Crute. How's it going? I asked him.
It's not, he said. Nada. Bupkis. Nothing happening. How am I supposed to explain this to my wife? I got called out at 10 o'clock at night because someone found a shoe by a dumpster. You know what she thinks? She thinks I've got something going on the side.
Do you?
Not tonight, Crute said.
I looked back at the deli. The natives are getting restless in there.
Tell them they can go. If we need to talk to them, we know where to find them.
I dismissed the troops and drove Lula to the office so she could get her car. I returned to the deli and tagged after Morelli. He was done walking the alley, and he was examining the parking area around the dumpster. You really like this, I said. He nodded.
I like police work in general, but this case is especially interesting. I'm sucked in by the single shoe left behind. It's a calling card.
Someone is sending a message.
Yeah. Too bad I don't know the content of the message. I only know the signature.
What do you think has happened to all these people? Dead?
That's one possibility.
What would be another?
I don't have another,
Morelli said.
I suppose they could all be working at a bodega in Bogota.
This was especially chilling since one of the victims was a man I deliberately put in harm's way, and another was my cousin. I wasn't fond of Vinny, but he was my cousin all the same. I'm not feeling good about this, I said.
I'm not feeling good about you even being involved. There's a serious lunatic at work here, and so far forensics isn't finding anything useful.
He narrowed his eyes ever so slightly and looked at me.
You aren't involved, right? technically I might still be the manager.
I thought you were gonna quit.
I sent Vinny the text message when I was with you, but I never got an answer. I suppose he was already beamed up or rubbed out or shipped off to Bogota.
My understanding is that the deli is owned by Harry. You can tell Harry you're no longer manager.
You're right. I'll get in touch with Harry first thing in the morning. Chapter 6. First thing in the morning for Morelli is different than first thing in the morning for me. Morelli is showered and dressed and out the door at the crack of dawn. I usually drag myself out of bed a couple hours later. This morning I heard him leave, and I lay in bed with my eyes wide open. I was plagued with guilt over Kulicki and concern for Vinny. I always thought if Vinny would just disappear, it would be like my family was finally free of something horrible, like boils or ringworm or chronic bloat. Now that he really had disappeared, I found that my emotion wasn't the joy I'd expected. If I could put my finger on an emotion, it would be grief. I was truly worried. Go figure. I gave up on sleep and got dressed. I grabbed a waffle out of the freezer, hugged Bob, and drove back to my apartment while I gnawed on the waffle. I live in a dated, uninspired three-story building that straddles the Trenton city limits. I have one bedroom, one bathroom, one television, a kitchen, a dining alcove, and a living room. My furniture is mostly second-hand. My fridge contains beer, wine, Velveeta cheese slices, strawberry preserves, sometimes milk, olives, bread and butter pickles, various condiments, and on occasion, leftover pizza. I share the apartment with a hamster named Rex. He lives in an aquarium on my kitchen counter. He doesn't bark and he has very small poop, so he would be the perfect pet if I could just walk him on a leash. I said hello to Rex and apologized for spending the night with Morelli. I gave him fresh water and food and told him I loved him. He blinked his round black eyes at me and twitched his whiskers. "I have a problem," I said to Rex. "I agreed to take this very dangerous job. I didn't know it was dangerous when I took it. I found out when I showed up for work. So I chickened out of the job and encouraged someone to take my place. It was someone who was in a vulnerable spot and thought I was doing him a favor. And now he's missing, and I feel sick inside." I dropped a peanut into the cage, and Rex stuffed it into his cheek. He looked as if he still liked me, even though I wasn't such a nice person for possibly getting Wayne Kulicki killed. That's a good thing about having a hamster as a roommate. They're not judgmental, as long as you give them an occasional peanut. "And that's not all," I told Rex. "Vinny is missing. We both know he's never been my favorite person, but as it turns out, I don't feel good about something bad happening to him. The police are involved, but I don't see them making much progress. I feel like I should be doing something to help. I'm a recovery agent. I'm supposed to be good at finding people." Rex looked doubtful at this. "True, I'm not the world's best recovery agent," I said, "but sometimes I get lucky." I left Rex to enjoy his peanut, and I marched off to take a shower and change into clean clothes. Morelli wasn't going to be happy, but I had to do the right thing. I was going back to the deli. I was going to try to find Kulicki and Vinny, dead or alive, and I was going to be careful not to end up snatched, leaving a single shoe behind. A half hour later, I returned to the kitchen, took my S&W-38 out of the brown bear cookie jar, and dropped it into my messenger bag. It probably wouldn't be effective against aliens from outer space, but it might be helpful against any psycho who wanted to ship me off to Bogota. I called Ranger and told him about my moral dilemma.
"Babe," Ranger said, "your intentions are admirable, but chances are good that you'll die."
"I prefer not to die. I was hoping you could help me by installing and manning some security cameras behind the deli."
"No problem."
And he disconnected. Ranger is a man of few words, but lots of action. Lula and Connie were already at the office when I rolled in. "Any word from Vinny?" I asked Connie. She shook her head.
"No, he hasn't been home. No one's seen him."
"I feel real sad," Lula said, "and I don't even like him."
"He could be okay," I said. "The aliens could bring him back."
"That's true," Lula said. "Sometimes people get returned after they've been probed.
Ordinarily, getting probed would be a traumatic experience, but Vinny might like it. He could even come back in a good mood.
I have some time before I have to open the deli, I said. I'm going after Victor Waggle.
You sure you want to be manager again? Lula asked.
Yes, I said. I'm sure.
You must be in a serious frame of mind, Lula said when we were in my car pulling away from the curb. You didn't even take a donut out of the box on Connie's desk, and that's too bad since it might be your last donut before losing your shoe.
I'm not gonna lose my shoe.
You carrying?
Yes.
Your gun got bullets in it?
No. I have to buy bullets.
That's just pathetic that you haven't got bullets. You're gonna give the rest of us women a bad reputation. You can't even protect yourself, much less stop a terror attack. Good thing you got me along.
Because you could stop a terror attack?
Hell yeah. I'm ready to take them idiot terrorists down.
Hard to believe since Lula was the worst shot ever. She was known to miss a target at point-blank range.
Jersey is full of those idiots, Lula said. And we even got out-of-state idiots coming here. We got terrorists coming here from Connecticut and New York. You don't hear much about it because we got excellent law enforcement and they thwart the attacks.
I suppose that's comforting.
Yeah, but you don't want to get too comfortable because those terrorists might be idiots, but they're sneaky idiots. It's only a matter of time before one of them slips in and rampages Jersey.
I knew I was going to regret asking, but I couldn't help myself. Why Jersey?
All us good citizens in Jersey got attitude. We got pride. We got brass balls the size of watermelons. We got rude hand gestures and loaded guns. Most of us. It's not like we're a pushover state like California. If you want to make points and get extra virgins when you blow yourself up, clearly Jersey is the place to accomplish that. You see what I'm saying? It's not like we're easy.
I sucked in a grimace. It was always frightening when Lula made sense saying something stupid.
And now I'm thinking about it. That's probably the same reason the aliens chose a deli in Trenton to suck people up into their spaceship, Lula said. Us Trentonians are a challenge, and for the most part, we got good taste in shoes.
I handed the Waggle file to Lula. I glanced at this briefly when Connie first gave it to me. I think he lives on Stark Street. Lula thumbed through the file.
Yeah, but he's way at the end, just before the junkyard. You want to get bullets for your gun before you go there.
I cut across the downtown business district and turned right onto Stark.
Drop me off at the beauty salon on the next block, Lula said. I'll run in and get you some ammo.
At the beauty salon?
Letitia sells some merchandise on the side. She's been around for a long time. I used to shop there when I was a hoe on account of my corner was only one block away. She's got a real good nail tech, too.
I double parked in front of the salon. Lula ran in and came out 5 minutes later.
I got your stuff, Lula said, and I got a kick-ass nail varnish. It's midnight blue with silver sparkles. I'm gonna look like the night sky. I'm gonna be like the Beatles song, Lula in the Sky with Diamonds.
Stark Street starts out okay with a couple blocks of legitimate businesses. The third block begins to get dicey, and it goes downhill fast from there. By the time you get to the burned-out, gutted buildings at the end of Stark, the only residents are rats and loonies. A very prosperous junkyard sits about a mile beyond the last building. We were one block from the end, idling in front of a two-story brick building that looked like it used to be a warehouse. It was the only structure still standing. Everything else on the block was rubble.
This has to be the block, Lula said. Hard to believe he's living here. And if he is living here, I'm not going in to root him out. The police won't even come to this block. There's going to be rats and snakes and unfortunate people's body parts in this building we're looking at.
Body parts? I asked.
I'm just supposing.
I made a U-turn and slowly drove back down Stark, hoping for a Waggle sighting. What else do we have? Workplace? Relatives? Girlfriend?
He's self-employed, Lula said, reading through the file. He gives that building back there as his home and place of business. Looks like his family is all in Wisconsin.
Who posted Waggle's bond?
A guy named Leonard Scoogie. It was a high bond, and it looks like it was secured with cash.
Do we have an address for Scoogie?
Suite 12 in the Hamilton building on State Street.
I was familiar with the Hamilton building. It was one block from Stark Street. 7 floors, built in the 50s. It had a mix of legitimate, semi-legitimate, and not nearly legitimate tenants.
Now what? Lula asked. Do we need to talk to Mr. Scoogie?
Yes, Scoogie laid out serious money for Waggle. He should be anxious to have him returned to the court.
I found on-street parking not far from Scoogie's office. I parallel parked behind a Rolls wagon that had seen better days, and Lula and I strolled into the lobby. Suite 12 was on the second floor, at the end of the hall. I opened the door to the suite and looked inside at a woman seated at a desk. "Knock, knock," I said. "I'm looking for Leonard Scoogie."
"He isn't here," she said. "He's in L.A. for the rest of the week."
Photographs and posters covered almost every inch of wall space in the small room. There was a door off to one side, which I assumed led to Scoogie's private office. The woman's desk was heaped with clutter, including an open box of Dunkin' Donuts.
"No," I said to Lula, "don't even think about it."
"Huh," Lula said.
"I'm actually looking for Victor Waggle," I said to the woman. "Perhaps you know him?"
"Of course," she said. "Are you a fan? Would you like a signed photograph? We have them available for $10.
"We already got a photograph," Lula said. "It got taken at the police station."
"Ours would be much nicer," the woman said. She pointed to the wall. "We have pictures of the band, too."
Lula and I went to the wall and looked at the photographs.
"This sucker is in a band," Lula said. "I could recognize him by the snake tattoo. The other idiots in the band got spiders on their foreheads."
"Lead singer in Rockin' Armpits," the woman said. "Mr. Scoogie has high hopes for Victor."
"Yeah, us too," Lula said. "You know where we can find him?"
"They perform at the Snake Pit every Thursday and Friday."
"I guess that makes sense for someone that's got a snake tattooed on his neck," Lula said. "Where's it at?"
"Stark Street," the woman said. "It's easy to find. They always light the building with searchlights when the band is performing."
"I bet," Lula said.
"During the day, the building looks a little run down," the woman said, "but I'm told it's very festive at night."
"It's only Tuesday," Lula said. "Suppose we want to find Victor before Thursday."
"I'm afraid we're not allowed to release personal information on our clients," the woman said.
I gave her my business card. "Victor is in violation of his bond agreement," I said. "He missed his court appearance. We need to find him and get him rescheduled."
"Oh, dear," she said. "It must have slipped his mind. Have you tried his cell phone?"
"He's not picking up."
"I'm afraid I don't know much about Victor. Often when our clients are in the early stages of their careers, they tend not to have a permanent address."
"Why is that?" Lula asked.
"They haven't any money," the woman said. "I can give you a printout of our press release. It is the names of the four other band members. I imagine they would know where to find Victor."
"Mr. Scoogie is Victor's agent?" I asked.
"Agent and manager," she said.
I took the press release and thanked the woman. Lula and I left the office and returned to my car.
"I can't believe she didn't offer us a donut," Lula said. "That showed a less than gracious personality. I wouldn't trust someone who doesn't offer a guest a donut."
I didn't have a lot of thoughts about the donuts. My thoughts were about Scoogie and his interest in Victor Waggle. Hard to believe Scoogie's high hopes were sufficient to warrant putting up a five-figure bond for someone who went around stabbing people because he was having a bad day. Something was missing in the picture.
"I can't stop thinking about a donut now," Lula said. "It's stuck in my mind. I'm going to have to get a donut."
"It's almost 10. I'm heading for the deli. You can grab something to eat there."
"I'm impressed that you're taking your manager job seriously. Well, with all that's been happening, a lot of people wouldn't see this as having long-term career potential."
"I'm not interested in long-term career potential. I want to find Vinny and Wayne Kulicki."
"So you're making yourself the next target?"
"More or less."
"That could be a bad idea, being that you're not exactly Ranger."
"No, but Ranger's going to help me. He's installing security cameras."
"I hate to be a party pooper, but I'm thinking security cameras aren't going to give you a lot of security. From my knowledge of this sort of thing, which mostly comes from Star Trek, it all happens pretty fast. You get vaporized, and next thing, you're having dinner with a Klingon."
"I'm going with the outside chance that it's not space aliens." Chapter 7. I pulled to the curb in front of the deli and parked behind a Rangeman SUV. The deli door was unlocked, and Ranger's tech guy was inside, on a ladder. No surprise that he could let himself in. His name was Randy, and he was a master electrician, a pickpocket, a locksmith, a safecracker, and a sharpshooter. His work history prior to Ranger was south of the law.
Good morning, Raymond said to Lula and me. As you can see, we have a man in black working to bring us into the age of surveillance.
Lula went straight to the fridge. Stephanie wants to have video for YouTube when she gets snatched up.
She is a woman with vision, Raymond said.
Where's that carrot cake from yesterday? Lula asked. I don't see it here.
Bottom shelf, Stretch said. If you eat it all, you have to make a bakery run.
I see two cakes down here, Lula said. Stretch was setting up his prep area.
Yeah, like I said, if you eat it all, you have to make a bakery run.
Huh, Lula said. Smart ass.
I walked through the kitchen to the back door and looked outside. There was no sign that anything out of the ordinary had taken place. The crime scene tape had been taken down. The lone shoe had been removed. A man appeared at the edge of the parking area. It was Wolf. He crooked a finger at me and motioned me forward. I gave a single shake of my head, no. I mimicked his gesture, motioning him to come to me. He smiled. There was a flash of light, a burst of smoke, and he was gone. I stepped back, closed the door, and sucked in some air, hard not to get rattled by Wolf. I wasn't bothered by the theatrics. That was just Wolf having fun. I was bothered by the man. I knew him on a superficial level as my drop-in friend Diesel's mysterious and complicated cousin. He was a man who tended to live in shadows and to come and go like thunder and lightning. And by thunder and lightning, I'm not referring to his exit act, but by the disturbing, magnetic, almost electric energy that surrounded him. He aroused my curiosity and simultaneously set off stranger danger alarms. And I was a little freaked out that he was suddenly being seen in the two areas where people had vanished. Everything seemed to be business as usual at the deli, so I called Connie and asked her to get me some information on the band members. 10 minutes later, she texted back. I'm going to try to talk to the armpit guys, I said to Lula. I'll be back for the lunch rush. Do you want to stay here or come with me?
I'll come with you, just in case you get beamed up off-site. I don't want to miss it.
Zygmunt Klug was first on the list. He was 19 and shared the same address as Victor Waggle. His parents lived in Arizona. He had no employment history. I moved him to last on the list. Jamie Rolls was living with his parents on Mayberry Street and was a pizza delivery specialist for Nuhana's Pizza Emporium. I was familiar with Mayberry. It was tucked in behind the bonds office on Hamilton. It was a nice neighborhood of well-kept, modest houses. I moved Jamie to the top of the list.
I heard about Nuhana's, Lula said. I saw it advertised on television the other day. They got emporiums all over the country, and if you order before noon and get them delivered after midnight, the pizza is only 99 cents. I think that's because they must make them in China and ship them over here.
I found the Rolls house, and Lula and I went to the door. An older woman answered. Her hair was gray and cut short. Her skin was wrinkled and slack. She had a cigarette stuck to her lower lip and an overweight white cat under her arm.
The cat tries to run out when you open the door, she said. Either come in or go away. I can't hold this cat forever.
Lula and I stepped inside and closed the door. The woman put the cat down. It gave itself a quick couple licks and walked away. We're looking for Jamie Rolls, I said. The woman squinted at us.
Are you hookers?
Not anymore, Lula said. Only once in a while if I really need the money, like sometimes when Macy's has a shoe sale.
I gave the woman my card. We're trying to locate Victor Waggle, I said. We thought Jamie might be able to help us.
Jamie is in the cellar, the woman said. It's his man cave. He goes down there to play with himself.
Nice to see you're open-minded about it, Lula said.
My daughter-in-law doesn't like it, the woman said, but I don't see anything wrong with all those video games.
Sure, Lula said. I knew you were talking about video games.
The woman led us through the house to the cellar door.
Anyway, playing those games is better than when he tries to sneak the women in. Hookers and groupies and gropers. The worst is that mud wrestler, Animal. He says he knows all these women because he's a rock star, but I think it comes from delivering pizza.
The cellar was unfinished, with beams and electrical wires overhead.
The floor was concrete. Lighting was utilitarian. The furnace and water heater took up one corner, and a lot of the rest of the space was given over to storage. In the midst of all this, Jamie had positioned a bedraggled couch, a large, scarred wooden coffee table, and a television on a card table. He was slouched on the couch in half-darkness, gamer remote in hand, concentrating on digitally killing people. He flicked a look at Lula and me and went back to his game.
$10 or a BJ for an autograph, he said.
We're looking for Victor Waggle, I said. Do you know where we can find him?
He'll be at the Snake Pit on Thursday.
How about today? Lula asked, moving in front of the television.
Jeez, bitch, Jamie said. You got your fatness in front of my screen. I'm laying waste to the kingdom here. I'm like on a siege.
Victor Waggle, I said. Where is he?
He's nowhere. The dude is loose.
He's loose? What does that even mean?
It means he moves around. The bitches love him. They all want his seed.
Great. The moron with a snake tattooed on his neck is a seed spreader. Just what the world needs. How do you get in touch with Victor? I asked.
Sometimes he checks his text messages, Jamie said. Depends if he's having a good day or a bad day.
Yeah, Lula said. He stabs people on a bad day, and then he pisses on their dog.
It was wrong of him to piss on the dog. We all called him on that, Jamie said.
Lula and I returned to my car.
I wouldn't want him delivering my pizza, Lula said. He was rude and unattractive.
Martin Camel was next up. He was a barista at Giulio Coffee on State Street. His address was 415 Stark Street, apartment 3B. That was the fourth block of Stark and marginally safe.
At least he has an address, Lula said, and he's even got a good job, in spite of the spider on his forehead.
Giulio Coffee was in a strip mall on the fringe of the state capitol complex. I parked in the strip mall lot, and Lula and I walked into the coffee shop. It looked a lot like a Starbucks, except it was called Giulio. Two men and three women were working behind the counter. None of them had a spider tattooed on their forehead. Lula ordered a double chocolate chip frappuccino, a Rice Krispies treat, and a Morning Glory muffin. I ordered a caramel frappuccino. I was hoping Martin would be here today, I said to the woman who took my order. He's off today, she said. He'll be here tomorrow.
Are we going to his apartment now? Lula asked me.
No, there's not enough time for that. We'll go after the lunch rush. Lula and I got back to the deli a little before noon, and people were already lining up outside. I opened the front door, and they followed me in. Raymond was at the fry station. Dahlia was on the phone taking down an order. Stretch was working at the prep table. Hal was standing behind Stretch. Hal was the elephant in the room. He's the size of a Volkswagen bus and not built to fit in a galley kitchen.
Randy has all the cameras installed and working, Hal said to me, and I'm supposed to stay here and make sure nothing bad happens to you.
Very thoughtful, but entirely unnecessary, I said. I'll be okay. I even have a gun in my bag.
I'm not supposed to let you out of my sight, Hal said. Ranger won't be happy if I disobey orders, and it's not good when Ranger isn't happy. I can't work like this, Stretch said. You gotta get Stegosaurus out of the prep area, and I need a sandwich maker.
I'm up, Lula said. Where's my hat? Where's my apron? Where's the hot sauce?
I moved Hal into a corner, and I joined Lula.
I'm getting the hang of this, Lula said. I need turkey. Get me more turkey, and put mayo on this roll for me, and add some pickles.
Wait, I said. This is an order for ham and cheese.
Say what?
You have to look at the ticket. You can't just give them anything.
This here surprise day. It's my new promotional idea. You order something, and then you get a surprise. This guy's surprise is a turkey sandwich. Give me some of that green stuff.
That's wasabi.
No shit. I'm gonna wasabi the heck out of this sandwich.
Where's my ham and cheese? Stretch yelled. Where's my pastrami on rye?
Keep your shirt on, Lula said. I'm working under harsh circumstances. I can't find no more turkey.
Fries are up, Raymond said. Rings are up.
Stretch took the wasabi turkey from Lula, sliced it in half, and sucked in air.
Damn, he said. I cut off part of my finger.
I looked over, and blood was all over his white chef's jacket, dripping off his finger onto the cutting board.
Somebody get a Band-Aid, Lula said. This boy needs a Band-Aid.
Stretch calmly picked something off the cutting board and stuck it to his bloody finger. He wrapped a paper towel around it all, took a Band-Aid from Raymond, secured the towel with the Band-Aid, and held his hand above his head.
No big deal, he said. I've done this before.
Yes, this happens many times, Raymond said. He must go to get his finger stitched back on now.
Hal was standing next to me. His eyes rolled back into his head, and he crashed to the floor.
This big man just fell to the floor, Raymond said.
He faints when he sees blood, I said. He'll come around.
I must return to my fry station, Raymond said. I have many orders of onion rings that must be done to perfection.
Take Stretch to the emergency room to get stitched up, I said to Lula. Hal and I will take over here. Everyone looked down at Hal. Lula towed him with her Louboutin knockoffs. Hal opened his eyes and blankly stared at the ceiling.
What?
Hal said. You fainted, I told him. Stay down until I get things cleaned up.
Okay, Hal said. Don't tell Ranger.
Dahlia and I scrubbed everything with soap and bleach. I changed out the cutting board. I got Hal to his feet. Are you any good at making sandwiches? I asked him.
Yeah, I make good sandwiches. The trick is to put the mustard on the meat side and never use lettuce. Lettuce is for sissies.
I got him dressed up in a hat and apron and handed him a takeout order for 6 people. You do the takeouts and I'll do the table orders, I told Hal. He looked at the slip of paper.
No problem. I can do this, but there's no sliced turkey in the container labeled turkey.
Don't worry about it. This is surprise day. Be creative. Chapter 8. The deli was empty by 2 o'clock. I suspected most of the customers would never return. I did my best, but I was at the bottom of a learning curve. I had mustard in my hair, ketchup on my shirt, my workstation was a mess, and the floor was a health hazard.
It is a very good thing that Stretch is not here to see this disgrace, Raymond said. He would poop himself.
Let's just clean up and move forward, I said. I was praying that Stretch would be able to work the dinner shift. The dinner menu included hot sandwiches that involved gravy and melted cheese. This was way beyond my culinary skills.
The dinner customers will be easier to please, Raymond said. You can hide the ugliness of your sandwich making under a generous portion of gravy. They will not know what they are eating.
I don't know how to make gravy, I said.
You do not make gravy, Raymond said. Gravy comes in 5-gallon tubs. You might not have noticed them because the gravy tubs are very similar to the tubs of rice pudding and lard. In fact, once when Stretch was very stoned, he gave a woman a dish of lard in place of the rice pudding. It was extremely funny.
I thought this must be fry cook humor. And I hoped he never told that story to Lula because she took her rice pudding seriously. The kitchen was almost clean when Lula and Stretch returned. Stretch had a bandage wrapped around his finger. Lula was carrying a grocery bag.
We would have got back sooner, but we stopped for turkey and stuff, Lula said. How'd lunch go?
Lunch was great, I said. Easy peasy.
Yes, Raymond said. I was a frying maniac.
Dahlia rolled her eyes and continued with her floor mopping. How bad is your finger? I asked Stretch.
It's okay, he said. I just chopped the tip off. They were able to stitch it back on. I've done worse.
Once he dropped the cleaver on his toe, Raymond said. That was a bad time.
Are you able to work? I asked him.
Cutie pie, if I had a dollar for every time I sliced off part of a finger, I'd be a rich man.
Okay, then, I said. I'm gonna leave for a while. I'll be back to help with the dinner trade.
I'll go with you, Lula said. Me too,
Hal said. I didn't mind this arrangement, because if I got lucky and ran across Victor Waggle, Hal would be useful. He had blonde hair styled in a buzz cut, a peaches and cream complexion, and enough muscle to stop a freight train. Plus, he could be the wheelman, and I would get to ride in a nice, clean Rangeman SUV that gobbled up gas bought by Rangeman.
Where are we going? Hal asked.
The fourth block of Stark Street, I said. I want to talk to Martin Camel.
Hey, I know that dude, Hal said. He's lead guitar with Rockin' Armpits.
I had a moment of blank brain. Hal knew Rockin' Armpits.
I have one of their CDs. I got it signed,
Hal said. One of the Armpits, Victor Waggle, is FTA, I said. The only address he gave is a brick building that's full of bullet holes and gang graffiti. It's at the end of Stark.
That sounds like the snake pit,
Hal said.
I don't think anyone lives there. It's gutted inside. Only thing in it is a stage. I don't think there's even any plumbing.
Is it safe to go there?
I wouldn't go there unless the band was performing. They bring in lighting, and if you pay to park, no one will steal your car. That's how they make their money, on the parking. And there's a big drug market. Once in a while someone gets shot, but aside from that, it's pretty safe.
And you go to this?
I used to date a girl who was all into Rockin' Armpits. We went to a couple Thursdays at the pit. I haven't been there lately.
It never occurred to me that Hal might have a life beyond Rangeman. He was a nice guy, but he looked like he ate kale and raw meat, and his sole recreation was skinny dipping in the ocean in January. Hal cut across the center of the city, turned onto Stark Street, and parked on the fourth block. Camel's building was a narrow four-floor walk-up. The stairwell was dark and smelled like urine and burrito. There were two units on the third floor. I rang the bell for 3B.
I don't hear no bell ringing,
Lula said.
I think his bell is broken.
I knocked on the door. No answer. I knocked again. Nothing.
Maybe you didn't knock loud enough,
Lula said.
He could be hard of hearing, being that he plays in a band. He might not be wearing his hearing aid.
Let me try,
Hal said. Hal pounded on the door, and the door splintered around the lock and popped open.
Oops, Hal said. My bad.
A tall, skinny guy with a lot of curly black hair and a spider tattooed on his forehead looked out at us.
Hey, he said, you broke my door.
Sorry, Hal said. It was an accident.
No big deal, Spiderhead said. I'm just crashing here. It isn't really my door.
Martin Camel? I asked.
Yeah.
I gave him my card. I'm looking for Victor Waggle. He missed his court date, and he needs to reschedule.
This is about pissing on the dog, right? We all told him he shouldn't have done that.
He also stabbed two people, I said.
That was an accident. He was on a bad trip and got confused, Camel said. Like, that could happen to anybody, right?
It wouldn't happen to me, Lula said. Where can we find Waggle?
No one knows where to find him, Camel said. He's Ghostman. He's in the wind.
Let's break it down, I said. Where does Ghostman sleep?
I don't know, Camel said. He travels light and he moves around.
He's homeless, I said.
Home is a state of mind, Camel said. Some people carry their home with them,
he thumped his chest,
in their heart.
Is that where your home is? Lula asked him.
Nah, he said. I'm shacked up here with a crazy bitch.
We left Camel and went back to the Rangeman SUV.
That was an unsatisfying experience, Lula said. We didn't find out anything and he didn't even look like a rock star.
I checked my notes. We have one last band member, Russell Frick. He's a lot older than the rest of the band, works as a bagger at Food Stuff.
I remember Frick, Hal said. He's real old. Someone told me he plays with Armpit because he's the only guy they could find with his own drum set.
Food Stuff is on Brunswick Avenue, I said. Let's see if Frick is bagging today. Hal took Pennington Avenue to Brunswick Avenue and headed north. Food Stuff was part of a strip mall just past the medical center.
It was a warehouse-type supermarket that was locally loved for its double coupon days. What it lacked in feel-good cozy, it made up for in cheap. My kind of store. We parked in the lot, and Lula grabbed a shopping cart on the way in. "Why the cart?" I asked.
"I might see something I need. This here's a good store. They have a bakery that sells day-old stuff that's as good as new, and I hear they have excellent rotisserie chicken."
"We aren't shopping, we're working."
"Yeah, but this will only take a minute. You can go talk to the old guy and I'll scope out the store."
I watched Lula swing her ass down an aisle, and I turned to Hal. Hal was a godsend. He knew the band. He recognized the members, and if I didn't find Waggle by Thursday, he would go to the snake pit with me. "Do you see Frick?" I asked him.
"Yep, he's working with the next to last checker. He's a guy with the long gray hair. He's wearing the Spider-Man t-shirt."
I approached Frick and introduced myself. "I'm looking for Victor Waggle," I said.
"Are we all?" Frick said. "He owes me money."
"I understand you and Waggle are bandmates."
"Rockin' armpits," Frick said.
He stuffed milk and orange juice into a bag, added deli meats, cheese, and topped it off with a loaf of bread.
"You're a good bagger," Hal said to Frick. "You put all the heavy things in first, and you put the bread in last. I hate when baggers don't pay attention and the bread gets smushed."
"It's a skill," Frick said. "I have a good eye for fitting everything in."
"About Victor Waggle," I said. "Do you know where I can find him?" Frick put the bag of groceries in a woman's cart and set a new empty bag on the shelf in front of him.
"I don't think Victor has an address. He's like water. He flows into the empty space. He could be hanging out in a condemned building, or he could be living the good life playing house with a groupie. I'm sure he'll be at the snake pit on Thursday. I've been with Armpit for a year, and Victor's never missed a gig."
"Is this your full-time job?" I asked Frick. "Can you make a living doing this?"
"I was an accountant for 43 years, Frick said. "I retired 2 years ago, and now I do whatever I want."
"Playing the drums and bagging groceries?"
"Yeah. I get to meet people and I make some spare change. Gives me something to talk about on my Facebook page."
"Do you ever hang out with Victor?"
"No. Victor isn't exactly intellectually stimulating. I think he hangs with Ziggy sometimes. Probably it's more like Ziggy follows Victor around when he can find him. Ziggy is needy. He's kind of lost."
Lula rushed up to the checkout with her cart.
"I got us some good bargains. I got a birthday cake for a dollar. It says, 'Happy Birthday, Larry, Ken, and Stanley,' but nobody came to pick up their cake, so it was on the sale table."
She turned her attention to Frick.
"This here's a band guy?"
"I'm on drums," Frick said.
"Aren't you kind of old?" Lula asked.
"Yeah," Frick said. "Aren't you kind of fat?"
"I'm not fat," Lula said. "I'm excessively proportioned. It goes with my extra-large personality. Do you know where we can find Victor?"
"No."
"Then I'm checking out and eating my cake. I need one of them plastic forks. Hell, forks for everyone."
We returned to the deli just before the rush hour surge. Dahlia was setting the tables, and Raymond and Stretch were working in the kitchen.
"I'm almost done with prep," Stretch said. "I need someone on the phone and someone on sandwiches."
"I'm all about the sandwiches," Lula said. "I'm the sandwich queen. Get out of my way, 'cause here comes Lula."
"Hal can do the phone orders," I said.
"Hal doesn't fit in the kitchen," Stretch said. "Why can't you do the phone orders?"
"I'm the manager. I'm gonna manage." Mostly, I was gonna look around. I now had a monitor by the register, and I could pull up three views. Two views were of the parking area and dumpster, and one was of the deli interior. It was all being recorded and fed to the rangeman control room, but I could see it live. I wanted to be able to watch the monitor, and I wanted to watch the customers. Managers disappeared quickly. There had to be someone on the inside. Either the snatcher or someone associated with him was a regular in the deli, and I wasn't ruling out Raymond and Stretch. Two men came in and went to the takeout counter. They were wearing wrinkled suits and had their dress shirts unbuttoned at the neck, commuters fresh off the train. They looked at Hal and hesitated for a moment. Hal was in black rangeman fatigues with a Glock at his hip. Is everything okay here? One of the men asked.
Yeah,
Hal said.
What's up? You want a sandwich?
They ordered and took a step back. A woman rushed in and went to takeout. She looked at Hal, rolled her eyes, and did a small head shake, like, what next? Hal took her order and turned to help Lula. Delia seated a couple and put their order in. I stepped around to the register to look at the monitor. Nothing going on by the dumpster. So far, I didn't recognize anyone as a repeat customer. A family came in, mom and dad and two kids. They took a booth. After an hour, everyone was pretty much looking the same. Men and women in rumpled suits lining up for takeout. Families with restless kids looking for fast food. An occasional senior couple sometimes with another senior couple on a night out. No one looked like a killer or a space alien. Not a single Klingon in the room. When someone complained about their sandwich, Dahlia sent Hal to apologize, and that ended the sandwich dispute. Takes a special person to argue with a 250-pound guy packing a Glock. It was almost 8 o'clock when a man sauntered in and sat in a booth. I remembered him from yesterday. He'd come in at about the same time and ordered takeout. He was built like a bulldog and had short-cropped curly red hair.
Who's the big muscle man behind the counter? The red-haired guy asked Dahlia. Is he the new manager?
No, Dahlia said. Stephanie is the new manager. Red hair looked over at me, and my heart skipped a beat. I forced a smile and gave him a little finger wave. He stared at me for a long moment before looking down at his menu. So, here's the thing. I'm not actually very brave, and I'm not skilled at solving crimes. Truth is, I have no business hanging myself out like this, and yet, here I am, Stephanie Plum, manager, sitting duck, idiot. Dahlia put her order into the kitchen, and I pulled her aside. Who is the red-haired guy? I asked. His name is Mike. I don't know his last name. He pays with cash, started coming in a couple months ago. He comes in late, and he always gets an extra side of slaw. Mike ate his meal, put some cash on the table, and left. I followed him to the door and watched him walk down the street. He turned at the corner and was gone from view. I ran after him, but by the time I got to the corner, he disappeared. I waited for a few minutes to see if a car drove away from the curb. When no one did, I assumed Mike lived in one of the row houses that lined both sides of the street. I turned to go back to the deli and bumped into Wolf. He'd been standing inches behind me without my knowledge. I yelped in surprise and jumped away. What the heck? I said. The sun was setting, and the whites of Wolf's eyes were very white in the semi-darkness. His voice was soft when he spoke.
Return to the deli, he said. Close up for the night, but don't go out the back door.
Have you been following Mike?
No, I've been following you. We're both on a mission, and you have a knack for unwittingly stumbling across your prey.
And we're both looking for the same man?
It's possible. It's necessary for me to leave for a short time. Until I return, you are on your own, so be very careful.
Wolf stepped away and swept his arm out in a wide arc. There was a flash of light, some smoke, and he was gone. I hate when you do that! I yelled after him. It's freaky! I stayed in place for several minutes, hoping to catch another glimpse of Mike or Wolf. Neither reappeared, so I walked back to the deli. Raymond and Stretch were standing outside, smoking weed.
It is good to see you, Raymond said to me. You left very abruptly and didn't return, and we thought you might have fallen victim to the manager snatcher.
Why are you out here? Why aren't you inside working?
There are no more customers, Raymond said. We are on a mental health break. We will clean everything perfectly when we are sufficiently relaxed.
I pushed through the door and found Dahlia wiping down tables and Lula eating pie with Hal.
This is a good job, Hal said. We don't get pie at Rangeman. He doesn't want us to get fat.
Raymond and Stretch waltzed in, and we all got busy scrubbing down the kitchen. Almost an hour later, the kitchen was clean, and Stretch had taken inventory and passed his list on to his vendors. Bags of garbage were lined up in the hall that led to the back door. "Someone needs to take the garbage out to the dumpster," I said.
"I'd do it," Luva said, "but I don't want to be on video being the garbage girl. It would be unflattering."
"And I would do it, but I cannot lose my shoe," Raymond said. "I must wear 2 shoes at all times."
We all went to the back door. I opened the door, and we looked out. The parking area was lit by new floods installed by Rangeman. Stretch picked up a garbage bag and flung it at the dumpster. It hit on the top corner and burst, spewing garbage onto the pavement. 2 raccoons and a pack of rats as big as barn cats suddenly appeared and ransacked the mess. We all jumped back, and I closed and locked the back door. "Okay, then," I said. "Everyone takes a bag of garbage home with them."
"It might not make it all the way to my home," Raymond said.
"As long as it's not in the deli," I told him. "Try to get it at least a block away." Lula and I set our bags of garbage in the trunk of my car. I locked the front door to the deli, and I drove Lula back to the bonds office to get her car. I made a brief stop at Giovicini's dumpster to deposit the garbage, and I noticed Hal was following me. I dropped Lula off and texted Morelli, telling him I still had both of my shoes and I was on my way home. Maybe we could get together tomorrow. He texted me back a thumbs up. Hal was still behind me when I parked in the lot attached to my apartment building. He got out of his SUV and walked me to my door. He waited until I was in and the lights were on, and I told him everything was okay. "Thanks for keeping me safe today," I said.
"No problem," he said. "I got pie."
I waved him off and locked my door. I said hello to Rex and gave him a couple Fruit Loops. "The escort home was overkill," I said to Rex. "You have nothing to worry about. We're perfectly safe here." Especially since there was probably a Rangeman guy sitting in a patrol car in my lot taking over for Hal. Ranger could sometimes be obsessive. Chapter 9. Lula was at the window when I got to the office. It was a little after 9 a.m., and the single Boston cream donut was long gone.
"I see you're being followed," Lula said. "This is the second day in a row you've had a Rangeman escort."
I blew out a sigh. "Ranger is in full-on protective mode."
"It doesn't look like Hal in the car."
"Hal's shift doesn't start until the deli opens at 10.
"What the heck is this thing going on between you and Ranger?" Lula asked. "He gives you cars and security escorts, and you get to stay in his personal bat cave when you want. I know he likes you, but dang, you must be really good at something we don't know about."
I thought it was just the opposite. I'm not really good at anything. I'm like an inept pet. Beloved, but pretty much a disaster. And in spite of this, or maybe because of it, there's a lot of festering sexual attraction. Mostly the attraction goes unfulfilled, which I suspect contributes to the intensity of the festering.
"Do you notice anything different about me?" Lula asked.
Connie looked over at her.
"Is your hair a different color?"
Lula changed her hair so often it was hard to remember from one day to the next.
"It's called metallic magenta," Lula said, "and I had Shanika brush it out to full volume."
I have to admit the hair was spectacular. It looked like her head was a brilliant sunset that had exploded.
"I went to get it done first thing this morning so I'd be all set for going to the snake pit tonight," Lula said. "I'm all about rocking armpits now that I'm a personal friend of the drummer and the pizza guy and what's his name from the coffee shop."
Crap, it was Thursday. Rockin' Armpits was at the snake pit tonight. I blew out another sigh. The day was going so good until I remembered this. I'd slept in, I'd had a luxurious shower, I'd had a second cup of coffee with a strawberry Pop-Tart. The sun was shining. Now I was back to bounty hunter reality. Thursday had arrived. I told myself that I should be happy. I needed the money, and this was my best shot at getting Victor Waggle. Problem was, I knew it was also an opportunity for epic failure. I would have to attempt a takedown at the snake pit. There would be a lot of people in a small space. Some of those people would be scary. Many of them would be armed. Most of them would be high. I would want to create the least possible disturbance. That meant I would need to make my capture before or after the performance, and that meant I needed to be familiar with the stage area. At least I had Hal. He was big, and he knew his way around the snake pit, and he actually had some skills. Like, he probably knew how to shoot his gun and sucker punch a guy in the throat. Me, not so much.
"Looks like it's a good thing we've got the job at the deli,"
Lula said to me.
"Otherwise, we wouldn't have anything to do. You let Annie Gerke slip through your fingers, and you got Wayne Kulicki snatched. So now the only FTA we have left is Victor Waggle."
"Do we have any new cases?" I asked Connie. "No," Connie said. "Maybe something will come in later today."
"I tell you, it's a sad day in Trenton when there's so little crime that us bounty hunters are out of work,"
Lula said. "What's this town coming to?"
"I think it's all because of those damn tax cuts. People don't have to steal and deal drugs no more."
"Drug dealers don't pay taxes," I said to Lula.
"Say what?"
"It's illegal to deal drugs, so drug dealers don't declare income."
"Huh. I hadn't thought of it like that," Lula said.
"Let's go take a look at the snake pit before we open the deli." I cut across town, turned right onto Stark, and cruised past the hookers, the gangbangers, and the stoop sitters. I reached the first block of war zone buildings and looked for any indicators that one of them was a snake pit. I hit the second block and slowed when I approached Waggle's address.
"There's only one building standing here," Lula said. "This has to be where the band plays."
I didn't see any activity in the area. No cars, no people, no lighting equipment, no marauding packs of feral cats.
"I guess they set everything up last minute," Lula said.
I looked in my rearview mirror. The Rangeman SUV was still on my bumper. This gave me a warm, fuzzy feeling. I wasn't on my own in no man's land. I cut off Stark at the end of the block and headed for the deli. Lula and I were the first to arrive. Hal pulled in just as I was opening the door. Stretch and Raymond wandered in minutes later. I flipped the lights on. Lula unlocked the back door for the provisions delivery. Raymond went to the fry station. The phone rang, and Hal took the first order of the day. We were settling into a work rhythm. This scared the bejesus out of me. I didn't want to settle into a work routine here. This wasn't my dream job. Truth is, I didn't have a dream job in mind. I just knew this wasn't it. This job was even less it than my job as a bounty hunter. I thought after a couple weeks of working at this job, it might be a relief to get abducted. Lula had decided to wear her ho leathers as an accompaniment to her massive magenta hair. She was stuffed into over-the-knee black stiletto-heeled boots, a tight black leather skirt that barely covered her hoo-ha, and a black leather bustier that was struggling to contain her triple-D boobs. When she stood next to Hal in his rangeman uniform, they looked like they were working the lunch shift for S&M Deli. A horn blared from the back lot, telling us the provisions truck had arrived. Raymond grabbed the clipboard hanging by Stretch's station and went to check off the supplies. There were several companies that made deliveries to the deli. The main provisioner, Central GP, came daily. Twice a week we received frozen foods. Twice a week the laundry was collected and returned by Can Clean. And twice a week a Burger's Bits butcher shop truck delivered meat that wasn't frozen or prepackaged. The only fish on the menu was tuna that came from a big restaurant-sized can. Frankie drove the Central GP truck that brought us paper products, condiments, canned goods, baked goods, fresh produce, packaged lunch meats, dairy, and weed. My understanding was that the more exotic controlled substances were a special order. I personally don't do drugs. I have enough trouble making smart decisions when I'm clean and sober.
"We have received everything we asked for," Raymond said when the truck pulled away. "I will put all these things in the proper place."
"It's Thursday," Stretch said. "Bonus day. Did Frankie leave us anything interesting?"
"Yes, I have some blue pills," Raymond said.
Stretch looked over at the bottle of pills.
"What are they?"
"Frankie didn't know. Frankie found them in the pocket of a dead man. He was one of the line cooks for the East Street Banana Kitchen. Frankie carried a 5-gallon container of rice pudding into the walk-in refrigerator and found the cook. He said even in his dead condition the man looked excessively happy, so he thinks the blue pills might be excellent.
Have you tried them?
No, Raymond said. I'm currently in an agitated state from many uppers. It would not be a good test of the happy pills if I tried them.